From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Well, Park City's ban on single-use, thin-film, grocery-style plastic bags is garnering a lot of attention these days, particularly down in Salt Lake City, where just yesterday, the Salt Lake City Green Market announced that they will ban single-use plastic bags from being offered by their vendors.
Joining us in the first half of the show to discuss the early response from this ban will be Luke Carton, the Environmental Sustainability Manager for Park City Municipal. He'll also share with us some additional environmental activity going on at the city, including the latest on the Net Zero campaign and how Bonanza Flat might play a role in us getting to carbon zero.
That's right. All that and some news and reminders on how you only have a few days left to submit your comments on the proposed Bears Ears National Monuments, along with 27 other national monuments, which the President and the Department of Interior want to modify and possibly repeal.
We'll also talk about the newest poll on Utahns' opinions on the Bears Ears National Monument and issues surrounding it.
Yeah, and...
As course, well as the Senate voting.
The Senate voting down a proposal to move a methane emissions regulations or repeal. Thank you, John McCain. Let's put it that way. We'll give you some details on how that happened and what role he played in that. And, of course, the big news, the sea cucumber black market feds breakup.
It's been busted.
It's been busted. You have to stick around for that item. Take us out.
Remember, we don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments or questions to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
Hi, this is Carolyn from Recycle Utah. Don't dump that cooking oil in your trash or drain. When cooking oil ends up in the landfill or drain, it can be harmful to our water. Recycle Utah has a solution for you. Bring your used liquid cooking oils and fats to the recycling center, and it'll be used to make biodiesel. Recycle Utah is your local nonprofit recycling drop-off center, bringing water conservation ideas to you for over 25 years, and we support KPCW.
Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us in the studio is Luke Carton. He is the director of what?
Environmental sustainability, something along those lines.
Park City Municipal Corporation.
That was convincing. I'll put that on business card.
All right. We should know that by now. But Luke, thanks so much for joining us. You know, we said in the intro we wanted to talk about a couple of things, including the recent plastic bag ban, and also we'll get to the city's ongoing efforts to reach carbon zero, net zero, what's going on there, and how Bonanza Flat might play a role in that, interestingly enough. So let's start with the ban. It's been all over the news. And in fact, you said this morning in the green room that the AP poll wire picked it up.
Yeah. So it was picked up just this past weekend. So it was even in U.S. News and World Reports. It's been in all over the country, just as little blurbs that people see in the back of the newspaper. So it's been interesting. I mean, it's definitely had a large splash in the media side, which is, you know, kind of it being first in Utah is impressive. I would say in the nation, we're kind of sliding in the middle there. 230 ordinances were passed before us, plus two statewide ones. But hey, you know what? It gets people excited and at least starts the conversation.
Okay.
A step in the right direction.
Correct.
So for those people out there that may not know the details of the ban, explain it to us. What does it rule out and what does it still allow?
Yeah, definitely. So just to back up really quick, the discussion in the city has been going on since 2009. City Council actually passed a bag the bag resolution back then after some community outreach. And then a couple years later, you know, we wanted to kind of re-push our efforts. So people might remember the ski area challenge between towns. There was that going on. The city also put money into marketing and also bought a bunch of reusable bags as well. Then we tried it again to see if we could, you know, make another push to incentivize. And then finally we said, hey, you know what? We've been doing this for 8 years. It's time to look at the ordinance piece. So we, you know, in the stepwise fashion, the ordinance focuses directly on what people think of as grocery store checkout bags. They're really thin film plastic. And we went after them because they clog up the recycling system and also contribute to litter. Right. And we focused originally on the large grocery store. So we went after the largest source of these. And the goal was to make a step. Now the question is, what's the next step? Everyone gets really excited once you make accomplishments. And we're the great thing is we've been talking to special events to knock down the amount of single-use bags there. There's potential to expand it all retail. I know there's folks who are excited and interested to go bring it in front of the county council. So, you know, we're right now in kind of a 45-day holding period until the ordinance actually goes into effect. And yeah, that's kind of where things sit, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah. What other stores? So you have three stores.
Yes.
Primarily the Market, Fresh Market, and Rite Aid.
Correct.
And then the other stores, do the resorts play a role in this? Do his Main Street stores play a role? Maybe going forward, what's the next? I know it's 12,000 square feet too, right? That's the that's what the ordinance reads.
Yeah,
and
I think
stores meet that requirement.
Yeah, and that 12,000 square foot number actually comes out of the way our business licenses are written, so it wasn't just a random number pulled out of the air. But
right.
we are going to keep assessing and reassessing because one of the largest complaints we actually hear is fairness, and I think there's some interesting points made to that. So we're going to keep looking at the other uses of these thin film bags throughout the city and figure out next steps. But like I said, we're trying to take this one step at a time to try to do it in a little bit more of a scientific approach. But yeah, we'll keep assessing and reassessing and see what makes sense. And the reason we're after those really thin film bags is, first of all, that when reading through a lot of these ordinances that were passed, there's a lot of thought behind that, because those are the bags that kind of blow out of the back of waste trucks and get caught
right.
in trees, and you know they're exactly mm-hmm. what people think. I was actually on a conservative radio call-in show, and there was actually a lot of support expressed for the bag ban because hunting and fishing. You know, a lot of folks, a lot of people forget about the hunting and fishing community for the outdoors, but that was a really interesting piece to hear. And like I said, we wanted to make sure that this isn't a debate on barrels of oil or the embodied
right.
energy of a paper bag. This affects our community here. So that's why we discussed it. And the other key piece is this is a community initiative. It's been brought up a lot. It was time for the government to act and take the next step.
What was interesting, too, is that Tim Loveday, who is the manager of the landfill, the Summit County Landfill, says one of the biggest problems he has on a daily basis is bags, is plastic flying around the landfill and trying to control it and keep it from going off property, which ultimately it does. So he's all for it because of the litter aspect, not because, like you say, Luke, it's going to reduce the amount of plastic going into the landfill and the landfill is going to suddenly have 3 years more capacity or something. It's strictly an aesthetic thing in that sense, keeping Park City clean and aware, and maybe spreading the word, and maybe other communities, municipalities will be watching what goes on here and see if they can't maybe consider a ban of their own.
Yeah, exactly. And there are other communities that have reached out that they're still testing the waters. And I think the other key piece for people to understand, though, is this does raise the cost of the grocers in town for them, and I think that's a key piece for people to understand of if you're using the paper bag. So if you bring in your reusable bags, that can save the money and make sure you tell the grocers thanks, because it is a burden on them. And, they want to be a part of this community. They're really engaged and make sure you thank them.
One comment that I heard from a friend in town was that in another community that she was in that had banned these thin film plastic bags, they were offering much thicker but still plastic bags that I would sort of think of as single use, and the grocer was charging a fee for them. Is there something like that we can see here?
Yeah, so the bag thickness piece I've unfortunately become an expert on.
I'm sure.
So the thick plastic bags, so from like high-end retail on that side of it, those are viewed not as much of a blight because of you can reuse them. You could wash them. Realistically, does that happen? It's open for debate. But like I said, we want to kind of go step by step. There are communities that actually banned all plastic bags. There are communities that go after single-use bags, and that was almost passed by council that night. There were two council members who said, hey, if single-use bags are an issue, both paper or plastic, let's just get rid of all of them.
Right.
I think same thing. We want to make sure that we have a couple steps in place to figure out the best way to do it. Don't get me wrong. It's exciting to do that, but we also want to make sure that we're not just shooting ourselves in the foot on some of these pieces. The like I said, that thin film piece, because it's more common in our recycling system, it's more common to see stuck in a barbed wire fence somewhere. We wanted to look at that. In Hawaii, there was actually a really interesting article written by, I think it's called Plastics News or something like that, that talks about the gentleman went there and he actually saw those thicker film bags being used for people hauling their stuff to the beach and that side of it. So there is some reuse to it. And like I said, it's really easy for folks to say, well, you don't reuse bags that much, or they're not clean, or something like that. Our response is, hey, let's get these steps going. Let's get some momentum in the right direction.
And so, as you mentioned, paper bags are still an option. So there will still be a single-use option when people forget their reusable bags and they show up to the store, which inevitably happens from time to time.
Yeah,
and they can still use those.
And the amount of time people say, oh, I just forgot my bags in the car. Well, you know what? Now it's time to go back out and get them. I mean, that's truthfully it. And the paper bags are recyclable. I used to cover my school books in them. Yeah. They actually can be used in commercial composting systems as well. So like I said, it doesn't affect the recycling litter issues that we have here.
Right. Good point. And now there's a possibility that these stores might charge you a fee for a paper bag, but that's up to them.
Exactly. Totally
up to them. This ordinance does not include any types of fees.
Exactly. And that's another key piece. The state of Utah, we couldn't even look at the bag fee piece. There'd been analysis done in the past that we'd have to pretty much be granted that ability by the state. And there's actually been a Senate bill, Senate Bill 244 by Senator Iwamoto, which looked at a bag fee piece. And a lot of times those fees go to actually fund county recycling programs and litter cleanups and that side of it. But because the municipality didn't have that power, we had to look directly at a ban.
Okay. And speaking of legislatures, there's the possibility there could be some pushback.
Yes.
Because certain states, I know Michigan is one of them, recently enacted a law that prevents municipalities from establishing bans like this.
Exactly.
So they banned the ban in a sense. So state legislatures could, when the Utah state legislature reconvenes, they could think about this, and it would not be out of the realm of possibility.
Exactly. There are four states: Idaho, I'm going to forget one, Arizona, Michigan,
Arizona, right,
and I want to say Illinois. I could be wrong. It's called preemption. Yeah, that's the fancy term for plastic bag ban. but it is a possibility. But if you run around worried about possibilities all the time, you don't take action.
Right. Okay. So,
but you mentioned that on the flip side, there are two states that have statewide policies on.
Yeah, so California's is actually, California's was passed through the Senate and then also kind of verified by voters is one way to view it. And then Hawaii's is actually really interesting. There's four counties in Hawaii and they all passed a similar plastic bag ban. So their state level has actually been enacted by all the counties. It wasn't actually passed by the state legislature. So they kind of backed into a statewide plastic bag ban.
Okay. So what goes on now once the ordinance goes in place in 45 days, right? So that's sometime in June?
Yeah, it'll be end of June. What happens is it's fairly straightforward. The three grocery stores it'll switch to paper. And like I said, we really want to encourage folks to, you know, instead of using these oh, I forgot my reusable bags in the car, haul them in. And if you forget them, just say, hey, I'll be right back. You know, it'll take you, 30 seconds to run out to your car, grab them, and come back in.
Right.
So
There's no reason why, let's say you shop at Smith's or Walmart or some for the groceries. You know what? You could take your plastic bags that you get from Smith's and you can bring those in and hand them to the market or Fresh Market and say, fill these plastic bags. That's fine. There's no ban on that, right? That, in fact, you're reusing those. You're turning a single-use plastic bag that might come from Smith's and turning it into a reusable plastic bag. So this isn't a ban on plastic bags. You know, don't show up with plastic bags at Smith's or the market or whatever. You can reuse those plastic bags that you get from other stores.
You definitely can. And the other thing, too, is if you have a gluttony of plastic bags underneath your kitchen sink, like I do, you can actually bring them to most of these stores. They have recycling drop-off locations, yeah. And these bags do get made into decking and all this other stuff, too. So right. Even if you have a lot of them, just don't throw them in the trash. A lot of these stores will collect them as well. Like, that often gets overlooked.
Right, and some people I know use them as trash bags.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Or poop bags or whatever they like. So they reuse them. That's the point. Point is to not use them once and then discharge them.
Correct.
Okay, so that's the plastic bag thing. Oh, how are you going to monitor or survey the response to this? Is there any thought about, you know, 3, 4, 5 months down the road to see the reaction to this?
Yeah, we'll keep our eye on it. Like I said, once the ban goes into effect, we'll, you know, just try to raise the awareness around it as well. And then, like I said, we'll see the impact, talk to our recycling companies, look for the positive effects, and also see, hey, what's going on? What else? You know, just keep reassessing, keep your eye on it and track it, and keep talking to other Colorado community or Utah yeah. communities. And actually, there was a Colorado community that reached out as well, which was kind of wild. So,
oh, nice. Okay. Hey, let's take a quick break. A couple of sponsors, underwriters. We're speaking with Luke Carton, Park City Municipal Sustainability. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to some of the work you're doing with respect to Carbon Zero, the Net Zero program, and something called Carbon Sync, what that's all about, and some of the work you're doing there.
Awesome.
All right. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage pickup provider and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. Garbage and recycling containers should be placed at the curb before 7 a.m. on your scheduled collection day. Keep Summit County green. SummitCounty.org/recycle.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital and New Park Town Center, with new retail spaces and a year-round community development. Information about New Park Town Center is available at 801-303-5440.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Chernia.
And in the studio with us today is Luke Carton, the Environmental Sustainability Manager with Park City. And we talked all about the plastic bag ban and are now going to shift a little bit to another hot topic in town, Bonanza Flat. We've obviously been talking a lot about preserving and conserving this area. But there's another angle of this that we're going to talk about with Luke as well, and that has to do with how preserving this open space might help us get to net zero. So give us the very brief backstory on the Bonanza Flat property for those who may not have heard all the details, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so Bonanza Flats, I guess is the proper way to say it, bond issued this just this past November. The city said, hey, there is a potential to buy this iconic piece of land that if you go up to Guardsman, if you don't know where it is, ask almost anyone in town. They could probably point you in the right direction. So the city taxpayer said, yep, great, $25 million bond. And then the sale price came in above that. So right now there's, I believe, about a $2.5 million funding gap. I know leadership, Park City is going after, a lot of other folks are. It's truly just a beautiful kind of keystone piece that would really tie the community park together. It's an iconic piece of open space, amazing for watershed. You know, I think a lot of folks have heard the amazing, it's just a beautiful, beautiful chunk of land that's been in private hands, and this is a possibility to open it up to the public. So that's going on. And the other thing that folks don't see on the open space side that really affects my world is something called a carbon sink.
Mm-hmm.
You got plants growing. And you've got the roots going into the ground. And what it's doing is it's truthfully just kind of, you can view it as the reverse fossil fuel. It's pumping that carbon back into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do is we're undergoing a process this summer to actually quantify that. We want to try to figure out how much carbon our open space is pumping into the ground. So in the world of net zero, where we have, you know, a city plow truck that's burning diesel and putting CO2 up in the air, our open space is grabbing CO2 and putting it down into the soil. So that's the concept of net zero. can we get the math equal, the pluses to equal the minuses, and that gets you to net zero. Really simple concept.
Right.
You can get really academic and overly complicated. The other part with the open space side that folks are really going to start seeing here, even in keep your eye on social media with Summit Lands and Park City Municipal, we're actually going to be doing some tree planting out in Round Valley. These are not landscape, beautiful trees, watered, mulched, you know, right. All that stuff. What we're trying to do is we're going to try a bunch of different tree species out there and see how they grow over the next few years. So then as we look at improving some of these lands with native species, that will actually drive up some of the carbon sink value. And these are plans that will, you know, you plant and they will have the positive impact for generations to come. And that's what we're trying to set ourselves up for. And Bonanza Flat is an amazing biologically diverse location. Believe it or not, Utah is the second most biologically diverse state in the country behind Hawaii, which is kind of a cool fact. Because when you think about it, we have high mountains, we have desert, we kind of have everything in between.
Right.
So we're looking at the Bonanza Flat piece as you think of that just iconic landscape, all those trees, all those pieces up there, same thing. It's just adding value. So the great thing with carbon sinks is it's just another box to tick to say, hey, we love it because it creates beautiful vistas. It gives us great trails to ride. And, oh, by the way, it also helps draw CO2 out of the air.
Okay. So I guess you have to hire a consultant to figure out what to quantify how Bonanza Flat absorbs carbon dioxide.
Yeah, and the wild thing is, Park City is a pretty special community. We had this a very unbelievably smart person reach out and said, hey, I would love to help out on this.
Okay.
So we have that going on with it's actually a GIS analysis. We're also using something called the Urban Forestry Plan as well. We can look at everything from, you know, Round Valley, but also the golf course, Bonanza Flat, all these other pieces. And you can look at, there's actually a lot of different ways to calculate that math. And we're just looking at what's the most appropriate for this region.
Here's an exercise. You just speak the golf course, which is grass.
Mm-hmm.
Does grass serve as a greater carbon sink than, say, natural vegetation or planting trees? That would be an interesting exercise to determine that.
Those are one of the questions. The other interesting debate going on, and it's more of a theoretical debate, is you say, all right, invasives can actually draw down more because they grow well. And so that's why we said, hey, we're going to look at natives. We're going to look at, but also some of these more manicured places too, like our golf course. Because a lot of folks don't view it, but Leonard, our golf course does an amazing work with their water, chemical use, and that side of it. They can control sprinkler heads individually. And then towards the end of the summer, you'll notice some of the rough areas turn more into lynx style, mm-hmm. so drier grass.
Right.
And it's awesome what they can do out there, but you also got to view it as a golf course's job is to keep the grass growing and green.
Right.
And we got to think what's going on underneath the soil. That's root structure. That's adding to it. So the golf course is they're doing some amazing work out there. They actually have some hybrid electric lawnmowers. They have all these other pieces too. So that alone could be its own show. But as you expand that out to the rest of our open space, we have a diverse ecosystem. We actually have some ag land as well. So what can we do there? And then taking out kind of the next step out to the eastern side of the county even, there are actually range techniques that you can use for sheep and cattle that actually drive more carbon into the soil.
Really?
There's a great TED Talk by a gentleman named Savoy, S-A-V-O-Y, who talks about, and he shows these before and after pictures in Africa, and he's actually doing work in Utah as well, of how different rangeland techniques can actually not only help hold what's there, but actually improve the soil health as well.
So do you or your team kind of anticipate that this will be a certain amount or a certain percentage at this point, or is it still a wild card and you need to wait until you figure out this analysis?
Yeah, we're underway. We can give you some rough numbers. It'll it'll be a large impact. But right now I don't want to go start running numbers out there until we have a little bit nailed down. Mm-hmm. But I mean, truthfully, by the end of the summer, we'll have our community carbon footprint done. Which is looking at community-wide, so within city boundaries, everyone, all the businesses and that side of it. That'll be done the end of the summer. We'll have a rough idea and also a methodology of kind of our baseline carbon sink load. And then we're actually looking at partnering with Utah State University on more of a larger scale landscape design piece, too. Or just looking at landscape-wide, how do things operate? Park City's not an island. Let's look at the basin. Let's look at some iconic landscapes around that too. So it's all kind of stepwise. And like I said, throughout the summer, folks will hear of these studies going on. They'll see folks out in the field. But as soon as early June, you're actually, and we'll be reaching out for volunteers to help us actually go plant some trees. Let's start looking, getting a kind of study plots up here for our carbon sink program as well.
Imagine going to a nursery and the plants that are there for sale may also have a little sticker that gives you a sense of what kind of carbon sink each plant or flower or tree is. So you can maybe you can vegetate, landscape your property with that in mind.
The great thing is, Chris, it's just added value. I mean, when you think about it, everyone loves trees. They're beautiful. You know, they can provide fruit, shade, cooling. But the other big thing about it, too, is those roots, and true for all plants, those roots are driving more carbon into the soil. So the goal is just to add that value. Take what we've got and say, hey, this is another community value that helps us meet our goals.
Now, does Swanner Preserve have do you guys have a sense of what kind of a carbon sink the preserve is?
We don't at this point. And as Luke said, you can get really complicated really fast, or you can do some really, really simple calculations based on, you know, other people's data. But it's something that we've been kind of continually looking at and thinking about, just as expressing, right, what that value is in addition to the recreational trails and the wildlife habitat.
Right.
Those are the things that resonate with most people. But I think there's an increasing concern about climate and carbon, and people will value that and understand that brings an additional service.
Well, no doubt. It's first of all, it is a carbon sink. It's a net carbon sink. You could
obviously
start from
yes.
there, but like you say, quantifying it is a wide
sink,
range of constraints you can consider to quantify that. But that's why you have that preserve. You know, it provides recreational opportunities, but it's a preserve of those native species, vegetation, that help serve as a carbon.
Absolutely.
Although it would be funny if it turns out like Dyer's Woad has a huge carbon sink aspect to it.
The irony.
Like you say.
Just let it go.
turns out we had it all wrong the whole time.
That's right.
But no, we don't think that. But that'll be great. So the Round Valley thing, again, you're going to take a plot. I guess first you figure out what's the carbon sink of this plot as it is, and then you're going to replace it with plant some trees and figure out what the carbon sink of planting these trees are.
Yeah, so when folks go hiking or biking out back of the NAC and through there, we actually have five or six different plots that we're looking at. And they'll be everything from more aspens and cottonwoods. Like everyone knows where that iconic willow is.
Yeah.
We'll do some planting kind of just above the bench there. We're also looking at different types of conifers as well. And like I said, these are going to be test plots. So that's right. Something that folks need to get comfortable with is they'll get watered through the summer just to get them through the summer. But then after that, they're kind of on their own.
Mm-hmm.
We want to see what grows up here naturally. We want to see how we can kind of kickstart some of these things, get them rolling in the right direction. And then, you know, a few years out, we can actually quantify it. There's actually carbon soil meters, and I just absolutely hacked what the actual term is on that.
Right.
But we
know where you're going with that. We get it.
Yeah, and the goal is saying, hey, we know we live in an impacted landscape. How can we start driving these things and making these changes? And also, let's get out of the academic and let's get into the action piece. So that's why you're going to start seeing these plots out there. Some of them might get eaten. Hey, you know what? We learned. Some might die. Some might do really well. And that's what we're trying to do is start that learning to have some base knowledge here instead of looking elsewhere.
Okay. That's great. And that gets started this summer. Can people go on the city's website and learn more about this?
Yeah, anytime. We try to update the city's website every 2 weeks or so. We're going to be doing an update on the plastic bag piece, some of the carbon sink pieces as well. Or truthfully, just reach out. I mean, we're myself and Celia, the two folks in the Environmental Sustainability Department, we love coming to talk to folks. We can also, next week, we're going to be doing a climate presentation for the high schoolers. The mayor is actually going to be giving a major part of that.
Wow.
You know, he's retiring, so we got to really use him while he's still in office. Nan will be there as well. But truthfully, if anyone wants to learn more about the city's sustainability programs or have a climate presentation done or something along those lines, reach out. We're more than happy to come meet folks and talk. We get really excited to get people in the loop on this.
All right, Luke, we got a couple more minutes. Any other things you want to chat about, topics, issues, initiatives?
Yeah, there's a Utah on the energy landscape really quick. You know, we have our 100% renewable electricity goals. Right now, 80% of our grid is fossil fuel fired. PacifiCorp, who owns Rocky Mountain Power, just came out with a really technical thing called the IRP, Integrated Resource Plan. The interesting thing out of that that folks need to realize is between now and 2029, the only generation that Rocky Mountain Power is going to build will be wind and solar.
Yeah.
That's it. So they're actually going to they're going to take some of their older turbines and kind of upgrade them, put new blades and new mechanics in there.
So make them more efficient.
Exactly. So they'll actually boost them about 30 to 40% on the power output side. And then also Wyoming's going to have a bit of a wind boom. They're going to put in a gigawatt, which is a fancy way to say 1,000 megawatts or like 300 or so wind turbines at least will go into Wyoming as well. So between now and 2029, you're going to see a large push of renewables. And the reason is yes, you have cities like ourselves, Salt Lake City and Moab, that are helping push it. But truthfully, it's the cheapest electricity out there. So that's great to see is we've reached that tipping point. We've hit that grid parity side of driving that forward. The other big thing that folks will see that'll boil over end of August is the rooftop solar piece. It didn't go away. It's just been in the technical argument side. The city is something called an intervener, so we are watching it. Figuring out where we can make the most effective argument to help push and make the Public Service Commission understand that you could say that rooftop solar is a cost to the utility, but it's also a large benefit. When you think of your electricity, if you produce extra electricity on your roof and it goes to your neighbors, that means it doesn't have to come out of a generation plant in southern Utah, get on a transmission line, come all the way up, go through, you know, like it's just the added benefit, and also it's a cleaner version of electricity as well. And cleaner on the CO2 side, but also on the actual, it's just easier use is a better way to put it. Something called power factor. Without getting too technical, it's a better electricity as well because the waves line up better. Is the way to view
really? Okay. All right. So that's and also as part of Rocky Mountain or PacifiCorp's IRP. During that 10-year period, they also plan to retire a few small to mid-sized coal-fired plants.
Not even small. These are the big ones. Yeah, so between now and 2036, 70% of coal will be shut down in the West. And that's, you know, a lot of same thing. Folks are like, oh, it's, you know, well, what about the presidential administration? We'll have small marginal effects on this. But the biggest thing folks have to understand is if I had a truck that was built in 1988 that had 500,000 miles on it, you can only change the oil so many more times. It's you know, they're just older generation plants, and they're not the cheapest power anymore either. But they were kind of scheduled to be phased out. So you're gonna start hearing about these large scale plants being shut down. There's one in northern Arizona called the Navajo plant, which was scheduled to get shut down.
It's a huge plant. Yeah, it's one of the largest in the country. That is
It's fine. But, it's 2019. That's getting shut
2019,
down.
2 years.
Yep, 2 years. There's some large plants in central Utah. Now the other thing we have to realize though is, you know, these are generations of coal miners that you know, these folks are going to, same thing, bear a very large brunt of this. And that's where on some of these large scale community pieces where we partner with Salt Lake City and Moab, looking at sourcing these renewables for our communities, we're actually looking at carbon in Emery County in the Uinta Basin of, hey, how can we get some of these renewables focused there to both provide jobs but also tax revenue for the communities? Because those communities, you know, it's a prideful job, and it's sad to see that industry stepping away, but it's also, you know, we have to help figure out how to bridge those to the future.
Well, it's exciting to, you know, start to wrap up on this note of great news in the energy sector for sustainability. We had Carl Pope on to talk about his new book, Climate of Hope, a week or two ago. And, you know, as they see it, it's mostly good news out there. Things are moving in the right direction as far as energy and sustainability goes. And we don't always hear that message, right? We're focused on the bad news that we're hearing in the news more frequently.
Right. That this is going to be rolled back or something like
exactly.
that. We'll return to the darker times of where more coal instead of less. But whereas it's a good point because whereas 4, 5, 6 years ago, this was kind of, well, it would be nice if, you know, we get that. And here we are seeing this happening by industries like PacifiCorp and the solar industry growing and wind industry. Now it's like it's on its way. It's going to happen. It's coming.
Yeah, one quick note to that folks can go Google today is TXU Energy. It's a major utility in Texas. if you have a residential power meter, you can actually sign up and get free electricity at night because they have a gluttony of wind. So you could literally have, I mean, that's where this could potentially go. If you look at the economic development of wholesale energy markets can go negative, which means electricity is no longer like, it's just crazy to think of. Imagine, you know, you run your dishwasher at night and you don't have to pay for it because your power is free because there's so much, the wind's blowing. That's where we could go is one of the end goals to look at.
Right. And again, it's happening.
Yes.
It's not just like popular science type of an article, like what if. It's happening. TXU Energy. Go to their website and learn more about what they're doing. All right, Luke, that's fantastic stuff. Thanks again for coming on the Plasma. And you made a great point. Always say thanks to those grocers at the managers there for being willing to adopt and accept this plastic bag, man. Tell them thank you. Tell them you support it. You're behind it. And you know what? If you want to pay a nickel for a paper bag, if they charge you or something, that's fine too. I think most of our community will accept that financial burden or so. I'll speak for myself. No, you say no.
I raised my eyebrows at that one.
But most importantly, say thanks to them for getting kickstarting this program first in the state. Let's see where it goes. We'll stay in touch on that, Luke. I'm sure there'll be more interviews.
Sounds good.
All right, Luke. Luke Carton, he's an environmental sustainability manager at Park City Municipal Corporation. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a break for some underwriters and sponsors. When we come back, we've got
some news updates.
Some interesting ones, too.
I'll call it.
All right. We'll be right back.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW, our local source for Park City news. Our agents are Summit and Wasatch County's source for real estate, and we can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, concepts, sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And let's turn our attention to some items in the news. We haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, and this is like another piece of good news, of exciting news in the environmental sector.
We're on a run.
Yeah, we're on a roll here. So this is something that actually happened last week, and there's been a lot of buzz building about this. But on Wednesday, of course, it happened the day after the show, so we had to wait 6 days to cover it. The Senate voted to uphold an Obama-era climate change regulation, which was targeting the release of methane from oil and gas wells on public land. So this couldn't just be, you know, vented. And this is both, you know, a climate change issue because methane is an incredibly powerful greenhouse gas, but it's also a health issue when, you know, thousands and thousands of methane wells are venting that, of course, drifts to the nearby communities, and that can actually impact
and these
health.
Wells, that's a good point, because these wells, in addition to venting methane, they vent other chemicals that are that are within the natural gas. It's not just methane. Excuse me, there's benzene. There might be some traces of xylene or other chemical compounds. Benzene's a known carcinogen.
Right.
Some of these other volatile organic compounds get in the atmosphere and help create ozone. So there's a myriad of impacts, environmental impacts, associated and with these wellheads that might be leaking methane. All right. So the regulation.
And so I think, the conversation has shifted a little bit from like, oh, this is just, you know, it's just a climate change issue, to it being a more direct public health issue.
Yes.
So the Senate voted 51 to 49 to block consideration of a resolution to repeal the 2016 rule put in place by the Interior Department that would curb these methane emissions.
Right.
So this happened because three Republican senators sort of broke rank with the you know direction obviously most Republicans were going and voted with the Democrats. So that was Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Susan Collins of Maine, and then sort of the somewhat of the surprise
the
was John
card.
McCain in Arizona voted against this.
He voted against it, thumbs down. In a very dramatic event, there was actually...
So Chris tells me, you know, you can watch this
live. I was watching on C-SPAN.
On C-SPAN.
The vote. And he was down in the Senate well talking to other senators, most notably John Cornyn from Texas. And he started to get more and more animated about the conversation they were having. You don't hear it. You just see it. And at one point... he just threw his hands up and went to the person who actually tallies by hand. It's all old school stuff. Tallies the senator's thumbs up or thumbs down. They give a thumbs up, and he gave two thumbs down on this. He
two
said no, and he walked, stormed out of the Senate chambers. And so the reason being, some people suspected that he kind of got lobbied. In the final minutes.
Yeah, this is interesting. A county official from Colorado ended up in the elevator with him, and she shared with him her concerns, how it's impacted her county, how it could impact a lot of other locations. And she was focusing on the public health issue. And there's some thought that may have swayed his vote.
Right.
And it's interesting. I mean, I guess in anticipation of the vote, Trump had sent, you know, our vice president, Mike Pence to the Senate floor anticipating
a tie
vote that then he would break. But with three folks switching that you know.
Susan Collins. No surprise. Susan Collins. She's the most Democratic Republican I know when it comes to.
Can we say moderate?
Moderate. Yeah, how about that? Okay, so that's an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. That's good news on that front
so far. It is good news.
All right. What else?
All right. So this was a really interesting piece. Maybe we can call this good news too. This is interesting. So there's a new poll about views of Utahns of the Bears Ears National Monument and what should happen with it. And this poll was commissioned by the Native American group Utah Dine Bekea. They commissioned the poll from an organization called Public Opinion Strategies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're based in Virginia and Colorado, but they're pretty well known for their history of working on Republican campaigns and Western conservation issues. And they found that 64% of registered voters in Utah believe protections should remain in place for Bears Ears National Monument, compared to just 30% who say that they probably or definitely oppose the monument. And that poll was conducted after Secretary Zinke's visit to Utah earlier this month. So that's really, really interesting because you hear our Utah delegation talking a lot about how Utahns don't support this. Don't support the Bears Ears National Monument. And this is suggesting otherwise.
Just the opposite. Two-thirds do support it.
Two-thirds support, one-third.
And right now, again, the Department of Interior is taking public comments on not just Bears Ears, but 27 other national monuments that are under review. It's called the Review of Certain National Monuments Established Since 1996. It's the Notice of Opportunity for Public Comment. We talked about this last week. Shameless plug. I wrote a letter in the Park Record.
Letter to the editor.
Identifying this. And that you can go on regulations.gov through their homepage, and they'll actually look for the link, Review of Certain National Monuments, etc. Click on that. Then you go read the public comments, which I have a few here, and... there's a little box that says comment now.
Mm-hmm.
Click on that and submit your comment. It could be one sentence. I am in support of, I oppose. It's whatever you want. It's that simple. It's that quick. You could you could take, you know, hours crafting a beautiful essay if you want. You have 5,000 word or 5,000 character limit or so. But the point is, get out there and comment. And what's amazing, and what I cover in my letter, is that there's no minimum age. Who could comment? And I confirm that with the Department of Interior folks, that high school students, middle school students, you know, elementary school students can all submit comments with respect to this, again, the review of certain national monuments established since 1996. This is not just Bear's Ears. We went through this last week. These are national monuments that, well, have been around for 10, 15 years. Berryessa Snow Mountain, Canyons of the Ancients, Cascade Siskiyou, Craters of the Moon, Giant Sequoia. They are all up for review, which means they may be modified or in some cases repealed entirely. It's unbelievable what they're doing. They want public comments. They're going to get public comments.
Apparently, there have been like over, let's see, about 60,000 comments have been uploaded. The estimate from this particular press release that I'm looking at here says that they're approximately 100-1 in favor of keeping the Bear's Ears.
100-1. That's great, because I did a little informal
analysis. Right,
you sort
of the first 100 comments.
I read through the last, the most recent 100 comments, and I came up with 96-4. I kind of gave a couple to them because we're on the fence.
If you're on the fence,
all right, you know, you can have this one. Yeah. But 96-100-1, it's astounding where they stand. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, the DOI, Ryan Zinke can look at that and say, well, it looks like it's kind of even. You know, they can interpret it any way they want. But your comment matters. This is an historic opportunity. I just want to read a few just to give you a flavor of how simple it is. And it's important that you make your position known in the first sentence or two. And here's examples. I see no reason to question or change the monument status of the national monuments created since 1996. Period. Done. We know where you stand on that. I speak for the giant Sequoia National Monument in California. If you've ever stood before one of these giants of the forest, you will feel the spirit of God awakening in you. I can pretty sure tell where you stand on that. Please continue to preserve the giant sequoias and redwood forests as they have been in the years past. So these are the comments that are submitted. You don't have to write in all caps. We get your. But one says, I am in writing in support of maintaining Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase National Monument, which is also under review, intact as previously designated. Please do not remove national monument protections for these areas. Dear Ryan Zinke, our public lands are to be kept public and wild, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the types of public comments. Again, go to regulations.gov and click on review of certain national monuments established since 1996. Submit your comments. They take Bear's Ears comments till the 26th. That's it. You only have 3 more days. They're taking comments on the other 27 national monuments until July 11, I believe. But it's important. They want to hear from us. Well, they're going to hear from us. And it sounds like you say now, it's running between 96-4 to 100-1 in favor of.
In favor of, yeah.
Maintaining these national monuments, leaving them as is and supporting Bear's Ears, the proposed national monument.
I'm so curious to see sort of where the process goes after this. I don't know, you know, what kind of feedback was anticipated, right? But with feedback like this, you have to wonder if that will change Ryan Zinke's approach or the administration's approach to this process.
Yeah, you're exactly right. No guarantee.
No guarantee.
100-1, like I say, could mean, well, you know, they could say, well, you know, a lot of these were form letters or they look disingenuous or they seem uncertain.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they
it's
seem
unclear
to be on the fence.
Unclear,
yeah. So,
all right. So we've got a few minutes left.
Yes.
And changing topics, I just have to. I've got some breaking news coming onto my cell phone here. This is a little bit different than what we've been talking about. But each year at Swanner, we have a sandhill crane pair that nests immediately adjacent to the Eco Center, and we've got a live webcam on them.
Have they submitted public comments?
And, you know, I'll talk to them about it today. And they. Hatched. One of the two eggs just hatched.
During our show?
This morning.
Okay.
And so if you hop on the webcam, you can you can watch this process. Sometimes they kind of hide under the wings of the parents. So as they stand up, you'll get to see these tiny little fluff balls. And you may get to see the second one hatch, because they usually hatch in pretty close proximity
they do.
To each other. Yeah. So we'll grab those clips. But if you've got a minute today, it's really, really fun to watch.
Just today. Perfect day for it.
Yeah. Beautiful day for
beautiful
it
day before for hatching.
Before the rain hits again.
All right.
This has been happening across town, so it's fun to see these little guys out and about. They're called colts.
Oh, they are?
Mm-hmm.
They're colts.
Yeah, like horses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Good job. Sandhill Crane breaking news right here on This Green Earth.
That's right.
and speaking of video, so you can go on and see the video. We may get a video camera in our studio.
That other breaking news.
We have our opinions on that.
That's right.
We'll save that for another show. All right. We got, you know what? Last one. Do you want to do the sea cucumber one?
You got to talk about the sea cucumbers. Right, you threw a teaser
really
out
funny.
There.
Feds bust $17 million sea cucumber smuggling ring.
That,
can you ever imagine those words?
That headline says it all.
This is not from The Onion.
Yeah,
okay.
This is real world.
Follow us. Federal officials indicted a father-son smuggling duo for illegally gathering more than $17 million worth of sea cucumbers. How many is that? This is off the coast of San Diego. They were selling these sea cucumbers to Asian markets, China, et cetera, Southeast Asian markets. The father and son team are accused of conspiracy, false labeling, and an unlawful importation of wildlife. Now, they own a seafood business, and they actually had a permit to collect sea cucumbers, but they went beyond their allotted collection. Smuggling of sea cucumbers apparently is lucrative because they're prized in Asia as a delicacy. And they can go for up to $300 a pound. See,
big,
if we had
big
a video,
money in sea cucumbers.
If we had video, we could show you what a sea cucumber looks like.
You
could
see
brought one in.
Chris shaking his papers, his fists.
So that's amazing. $300 a pound for sea cucumbers. I did not know you could eat sea cucumbers. Environmental groups say overfishing and poaching threaten our sea cucumber stocks. So
we're laughing at the
thanks,
headline,
feds.
But you know.
Hey,
interesting topic.
That has an impact somewhere in the environment. So sea cucumbers, I don't think we have them here yet, but be on the lookout for that. All right, last break. We got
to
come back.
It's time to wrap up.
We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Time to wrap up another show. We want to thank our underwriters who make the show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and of course, listeners like you.
We would love to hear from you, so email us your thoughts, comments, and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Or you can... you already said that. This is KPCW, 91.7 FM in Park City. Remember, we've got your Wasatch back. I'll be away for the next couple weeks now, so...
That's right.
I hope you're here.
Yeah, I'll try to make it in.
We'll see you then next week with Nell and her special guests. You bet. Thanks again. NPR News is coming up.